is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, August 21st, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we talk about the health of the nation post 50 years. Actually, I have Dr. Suzanne Lockhart with me, and she's going to be going over some health issues that the Bahamians may be facing 50 years in. And I wanted to discuss that, what we should be looking at, what we as a country should be concerned about, what should be our focus moving forward. And that's where our show is going to be concentrated on. A year and about a week now, I was admitted to the hospital. Right. Mm-hmm. I had a diabetes coma type thingy, right, where I had to go in intensive care. And so I'm talking about that juxtaposed to where I stand a year ago to now. But I want to know exactly, is diabetes a thing moving forward 50 years from now? What should we as Bahamians be concentrating on? The Ministry of Health, social-wise, in terms of how we eat, our diet, and focus on that, and how should we be sustaining ourselves. But without further ado, I reintroduce to you Dr. Suzanne Lockhart. Welcome again.
Hey, C, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. My numbers are good. I mean, I deserve one more checkup, but I feel good. My foot is not tingling as much, and I have energy, so I complain not. I smile still.
Good. I'm very, very happy to hear that, and very happy that, you know, you came through that episode. Yes, I had not remembered. You had shared with me that you had what you call a diabetic crisis mm-hmm. that landed you in the intensive care unit. And I'm so very thankful to the good staff of doctors and nurses and other medical personnel who, unfortunately, fortunately for you, but unfortunately for us as a nation, I would say, have so much experience of dealing with that type of issue. If you understand what I'm saying.
Definitely.
And I'm happy that you came through that. You know, some people did not come through it with as good a result as you did. You see?
So all of my joints and all of my feet. So I'm grateful for that.
Yes. And we're grateful that you are here in full and living color, as it will. You know, right?
But before we start, you're no longer based in New Providence. Where are you nowadays?
Well, where I am really and truly, I think I've gone back to where I always wanted to be. So I wouldn't say not fully based, because I travel between the islands, you know. So presently, my base of location is more up in the northern Bahamas in Freeport. But I come back and forth to Nassau. I may go to Abaco. You know, there may be plans afoot to visit some of the other islands that I need of care at this particular point in time. You see, but I still do have associates that, and we work together as a group, who can see people in any of those places should the need arise. You know, my company, Capriota Health and Wellness, always has been a mobile scenario, still primarily based in Nassau, as I said. And with the advent of telehealth, as we learn to pandemic, you know, you can do quite a lot. You can do quite a lot and help and assist patients. And this is great, especially in people who may exist in some far-flung regions of the Bahamas where you may not have access to regular medical care, or even those who are in the more well-populated areas, such as in Freeport and Nassau and Abaco, who may not necessarily want to go to access the public or private bigger health institutions as well. You know, so I'm enjoying the Bahamas. It's beautiful, you know, and I encourage everyone to get out and see, you know, what we have as a country. You know, get out and see how beautiful our beaches, how beautiful our landscape, how beautiful our people are. You know, majority of us, I think over maybe 80%, I think at the last census, they said something like the population of Nassau was close to 300,000, mm-hmm. which is, you know, a lot for a 7x21 island. But you have other places that have much larger geographic areas and locations where you don't have as many people. So I think from even if coming out of a very crowded, busy type of urban and city environment and moving into one that is less so, that certainly does increase your health quotient. And certainly is something that we should consider when we look at where is health going in 50 years' time in the Bahamas as well.
Definitely. Now, there are some big issues that doctors would say, hey, these are the primary issues that Bahamians face. What would be your four top, just to, for people to identify and look out for?
Well, what I would say, if you look at, the Ministry of Health has done a very good job of compiling data of what, let's say, our morbidity and our mortality rates are. So we can talk about it from a purely health perspective, and then we can talk about it from a general socioeconomic, just life perspective as well. But if you're talking about from it from a health perspective, then you're talking still about what I call the big four, which basically that you have heart attacks and stroke, hypertension, right? Those sort of like fall in where people are being carried away or carted away, so to speak. You have, again, diabetes, which is certainly a big and a major player in this area and in this field. And then you have your cancers would primarily be breast cancer for the woman, which, you know, the Bahamas has one of the highest rates, or I think they were seeing even the highest rate of some types of genetic cancer, breast cancers in the world. So breast and ovarian gynecological cancers for the female, prostate cancer, lung and colon cancer are still players on the field, unfortunately, for us as it were. And then we also have to look at accidents and the level of violence as well. That also is coming up there in terms of when we consider health and health factors, as it were. The scourge, and we shifted over the years because earlier on you had more possibility and a problem with infectious diseases, tuberculosis, pneumonias and so. But we have dealt with those and had the medical equipment and the treatment and the therapies for that. And now we have shifted to what we call that chronic non-communicable diseases, which are all primarily lifestyle-initiated diseases. Because in most cases, from what many physicians know, they are ultimately preventable. There is a genetic component to it as well. But it is the environment in which we place ourselves, our health, and our bodies that pull these genetic triggers and make the situations appear, or if they already were there, become even more acute.
I have a text which is reminding me that we are overweight, that we are overweight people.
Jesus. See, hey, listen to me. I know Bahamians like to be the top of everything, right? But I think we are on that top 10 list of overweight nations in the world. We really are. You know, and that is not a good thing. And I mean, I hold my hand up there. Because like I tell my patients all the time when I'm talking to them about these diseases, everything goes back, I believe, to diet and to nutrition, okay? And being overweight just really, A, too much food, B, too much of the wrong type of food, C, we're eating the wrong type of food and too much food at the wrong times as well, okay?
But Dr. Lockhart, that's called thick. We're thick-bodied. Is that being thick-bodied as being fat? Because, you know, we like our women, even our men, to have something to grab on. And I'm hearing that people are calling Bahamians overweight or fat. But in reality, we just thick, right?
Listen, you know, I believe that one should love oneself whatever the size you find yourself today. Because you have to. You know, that's where you're starting off from. And you can't change that in a snap. I mean, for myself, my journey to going from, I would say, slim and slightly thick to being overweight, which I am right now, was one that took 7 to 10 years and was basically that of when I changed what I was doing to a job that was primarily sedentary. And it didn't happen overnight, but you know, 5 pounds here, 7 pounds there crept on every year. And at the end of the time, whoop, you were 50 pounds, 60 pounds overweight because it came on gradually. This is the thing. But really and truly, you know, we have to, when we look at it, you notice that the Bahamas is made up of a variety of people. Primarily, we are Afro-Caribbean, primarily with many other things thrown in. So you will find that when you look at the genetics and the build, that many cases and in many places, big muscular structures, big body, big bone structures, and then muscular structures would also tend to predominate. But when you look at those, you have to also consider The type and weight of where the weight was or where we are place has shifted over the years, right? In many cases, people did not in the old days, when you tell somebody was a big body person, they were solid, so to speak. You were talking that these people were people who were muscular. It says they had a flat abdomen, right? And this may seem like something that is trite, but I'm going to come back to that. Having a flat abdomen or a flat stomach, not necessarily a six-pack or eight-pack or whatever pack, but that is very important. And that's one of the things that can tell you about, you know, obesity as compared to that you just thick or you just solid, okay? Because some people, they slim in terms of their tummy, but they may have a lot of, you know, solidity on their thighs or on their lower body region, you know, in the butt region. All right, that may just be a build or a structure that they have. That person is not necessarily unhealthy or, you know, fat, so to speak. But you got to call a spade. Many of us, when we look, we have the spare tire around our waist. As one cousin of mine used to say, you know, when people would comment upon his ever-increasing girt, he'd say, oh, I keep it in front, right where I could see it, right? But you see it and so does everyone else as well, you know? And when you have what you call that visceral abdominal fat, what that is saying is that you have that fat, that's really the body storing excess energy, excess food. You changed in how it's functioned from the time of prehistoric man. We're not meant to have all that amount of food. And when you feed the body a lot of food, it's saying, okay, I need to put this away because I have a lot of food now, but I know the time is coming when I'm not going to have enough. And so what happens, certain hormones come into play, insulin being one of them, where the body now starts to pack away the excess energy as fat. And after you put the fat on the skin, well, the body is like an efficient housekeeper. It's going to put the fat wherever it can find it to put it. It's going to wrap it around the organs, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, the intestines. It's going to put it in the in a fat of protective fat called the omentum underneath the abdominal wall. And that's when you find people have, you know, this big belly that we are talking about, right? That fat is very dangerous and damaging because that fat actually now produces many hormones. It causes us to have insulin resistance. So it means insulin, which should help us take glucose into our cells, the cells no longer respond to insulin. And that's when we get that type 2 diabetic profile. It causes us to have cholesterol. It causes certain biochemical changes to take place where our blood vessels constrict. And then our blood pressure rises. So that's a very damaging thing. You can tell with a tape measure, you know, if you're a man and you put a tape measure around your waist, it shouldn't be more than 40, maybe 42. If you're a woman and you put a tape measure around your waist, that is the dip, the narrowest part of your abdomen. Some of us, I think we can't find where the waist is anymore. It shouldn't be more than 35, maybe 36. And for most people, because when my patients see me, I measure that. That's one of the statistics I track, because in order for you to change something, you have to measure it. And every 3 to 6 months, we would measure the abdominal girth. I'll say, let's see how you're doing with your waist. And no surprise, if they're doing better with their pressure and their sugar and other things, you'll find that also their waist circumference is also dropping, you know? So it's not being fat shaming or saying, you know, you're fat and we are. But seriously, look at us as a people. Take pictures of a crowd of people from maybe, let's try 50 years ago to now, and what will you find, you know?
So Dr. Lockhart, what should I be concentrating on a typical wellness check? I'm going on my annual physical, male and female. What should I be looking for?
So the first thing I tell people is you have to know your numbers. You know, I recently took my car to the mechanic and he was shaking his head at me and saying, this oil is so thick. When last, how many miles ago you changed this oil? And I was sort of looking at him and saying, same thing people do, right? When you ask them when last they had their blood pressure checked. There are certain basic things you need to know. You should know what's your blood pressure like, you know, what's your systolic? That's the one on top. What's the diastolic? Systolic age and your whether you have diabetes or hypertension. Your systolic, you want it to be between 120, maybe not more than 130. The diastolic, which is the lower number, you want that to hit at 70, right? What's your fasting blood sugar? That is your blood sugar level when you get up first thing in the morning before you've eaten anything, right? And ideally, for your organs and body to function, you want that to be less than 100. Now, I know when I've checked mine, many times we are up in the night snacking, yeah? You know, you're watching the TV, there's a good series, you want to watch it, or if something else is happening, you go out and we do that late night snacking. When we do that late night snacking, our blood sugar is up the next morning because the body has not had a chance to process it, which isn't the best thing. We should want to know, as we said, what's our weight? And there's a figure called the body mass index, which compares our weight and our height together. Now, when you use that calculation, you want to have a BMI of let's say less than 30. You know, they say less than 25 to 28, but let's just give a little leeway because, you know, African descended people may have slightly bigger bones. So let's say up to 30, right? Many of us are over. And if you are 30, 31, you are overweight. 32 and up, you are obese. And many people have morbid obesity, where that figure, the BMI, when you look at your weight and height together, comes up to being more than 42, 44, 45. Some people it's 51. And the higher your BMI is, the more you know that you are more prone to those same diseases we talked about, cardiovascular disease, you know, diabetes, high cholesterol, even cancer and other deleterious situations, right? So we talked about the blood pressure, we talked about the fasting blood sugar, right? We talked about our weight and our height, which will give us our body mass index. We just talked about the abdominal circumference, right? Which is also something we want. Your blood cholesterol. You know, many of us have found, especially some people in the Outer Islands, where for them, conch salad is just like, you know, a daily thing because, you know, there's so much of it. They live close to the Ciota Sea community. Their cholesterol level is high because, you know, conch is high in certain types of cholesterol. Or some people like to eat pasta and cheese and butter and other things, yeah? So you need to know that because according to the type of cholesterol that is high in your body, you're at risk. When cholesterol is high, the body can't hold it in the blood and it's going to start depositing it into the blood vessels, especially we call the bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol. There's another type of cholesterol, the good cholesterol, the HDL, which sweeps up cholesterol. It sweeps it up and takes it back to the liver. And it's according to your diet, you know. HDL cholesterol is found in things like avocado and beans and seeds and fish, nice oily fish and olive oil. The bad cholesterol is found in all the things we like to eat, which we shouldn't, you know, the pizza and the ice cream and the cookies and that lard and everything else like that, you know. Those are some of the basic figures that we should be looking for. That's some of the basic things, the figures we should know. And we should have them. You know, and in many cases, I would give my patients a printout and say, these are what your figures are. That's where you are now. So when we come back and in 3 months' time or in 8 weeks' time or 12 weeks, we want to have it. This is the goal that we're reaching towards. You know, let's try see how we can get to these figures or numbers. Those are the figures.
Doctor,
you know?
I have a text. It says, morning, Mr. Nuri. I asked a doctor, I'm a middle-aged man and I found a lump under my right armpit. Is that a sign of any type of cancer? And when you answer that, because I know you're not diagnosing people, but you could at least give them some direction on what to do after that lump under his armpit. What is cancer? What causes cancer? What should we be looking out in the Bahamian culture or our diet that might could keep us away from cancer? Because it seems as if everyone is dying from cancer nowadays in the Bahamas.
No, well, not me and not you, and I hope not many of our listeners. So to the gentleman who has a lump under his arm, you know, a lump on a bump could always be a scary proposition, you know, because it's something abnormal that you found. So it's not necessarily something that can be bad. It could be a lump, could be a piece of fatty tissue that's in the skin, you know. Under the arm, though, more particularly, we have the lymph nodes or the lymph glands, which are like the vital stations for the white blood cells that fight disease in our bodies, you know, the lymphocytes, the T and B cells. You know, we heard a lot about that during COVID. But when you find that you have an increase in size of a lymph gland to a point where you can palpate it or feel it very readily, it may indicate that there's some sort of infection, some sort of inflammation, some sort of injury that particular area is undergoing. Because it's placed, so the lymph glands under the arm are going to be dealing with the upper limb, and then also the area around the breast and chest as well too, you know? So he would need to get a health practitioner, you know, a physician or a nurse to take a look at that to see where exactly what level is it. Is it just something that's in the skin? Is it just a lymph gland, a lymph node that sometimes if you put on the wrong type of deodorant or, you know, you have any sort of little infection in that area or inflammation, you can get it. Is it something more serious, you know? Does he have it anywhere else? Because sometimes when you have an increased lymph gland in one area, it may also, if you have them in other areas that you may not see, that might indicate a more sort of serious situation. So the first thing I'd tell him, he needs to, you know, get to his healthcare provider in the clinic or his own, you know, and let them have a look at that. They may then further ask him to do certain other studies to image it, maybe an ultrasound scan of that area, maybe an ultrasound scan of his chest, his breast. You know, you should check the breast on that side to see if there's any abnormalities. Male breast cancer is very much lower than incidence than female, but it's not happen, you know? So that's what I would say is next port of call should be to go let somebody have a look at that. And I applaud him because many men don't, you know, they see things and they just don't deal with it. So at least he's asking what to do. So that's a great thing. That's the first part of the question.
Yeah, he's better than me because I was going to get a pepper leaf and put it on the whatever it is. But anyway, go ahead, continue.
Well, you're going to try the pepper leaf, and if the pepper leaf sorted it out, well, okay. But you still, if you see a lump or bump in a strange place that you don't normally find it there, you really should go and get that checked out. You really should. You know, that's one thing that you should do. Yeah. And so the other question about cancer boys here, you know, people have said so many things and they're looking for the cancer, anti-cancer vaccine, the anti-cancer pill, you know, what's going to cure it, what's going to hit it out of the way. And, you know, I said if somebody found that conclusively, they'd probably be a quadrillion. But what the thinking is this, is that the cells of the body is made up of cells. It's going to come together to make organs. Organs come together to make systems. Systems come together to make the body. So the cell is one of the basic building blocks of the body material. And cells are like kept in school, you know. Cells obey certain rules. The body has certain, let's say, school principle-like things which will keep the cells in order, keep them staying in the same place. They're like kids sitting down in the class. The teacher says, sit in your best. Everybody sit and stay where to stay. Sit still. Okay, and that's an orderly class. The class can function. So in the same way, cells have certain substances in the body which cause them to stay in line, stay in good condition, grow to a certain extent. They don't expand or take up place and time over anyone, right? And that primarily happens because the nucleus, which is where the DNA of the cell lives, controls it. Now, there could be factors that cause that to shift and change. And so you'll have these cells that instead of behaving like neat kids in the classroom lined up, these cells start behaving like cavemen, where they jump anywhere, they go anywhere, they eat all the food, they, you know, they break down the neighbors' dogs, do everything else like that. So a cancer cell really is a cell that is now out of control. And so it's going to start to grow and change abnormally. And one of the things with cells stay where they are. So if your cell is in the breast, it stays in the breast. If a cell is in the liver, it stays in the liver. But one of the things of cancer cells is they don't like each other. They don't stay close and packed together. They will jump and go into the bloodstream or into the lymphatic system and go to other areas. And that's what we see when the cancer is spread. And also typically cancer cells, they're going to start destroying the area around them so that the tissue or the organ does not work, right? And then last but not least, cancer cells, because they are so active, they're going to take up a higher proportion of nutrients. So this is why you find that people who have cancer, and especially when the cancer is far advanced, what will happen is that they will now start looking, you know, malnourished and in a state of malnutrition. So there are a couple of things. So when you go back to, so that's what cancer is. Cancer is really a cell that is not under control. It's changed, it's shifted from its normal. And I'm breaking it down in layman's terms. You know, we can talk. You can talk about the cell as to what is the stage of the cancer, you know, and what's the spread or the extent of the cancer as well. There are different protocols that you can put. So essentially what you have to look at is what causes the cell to start to behave in that manner. What is it? So we know, for instance, that if you lie down in the sun, ultraviolet radiation all the time can affect skin cells and cause them to behave in that manner. You get skin cancers, right? We know that for the case of the breast and the breast tissue, and one of the things it is that the genetics of it, because there are certain genes, you know, there's a P53 gene, and there are certain genes that are tumor suppressor genes that the body has, which causes that it tells abnormal DNA. The body sort of like takes care of that, or it tells the white cells, come take this out. But if those genes are not working properly, or the cell system is not working properly, then that does not happen, right? So in the case of a breast, it may be a genetic mark, or it may be that you have an overexposure to estrogen, you know, and that can happen in many ways, either through delayed having kids, right? And then you have more estrogen being present, sometimes taking the medication, you know, postmenopausal, people who do postmenopausal therapy, right? Hormonal therapy, that can also happen. So different kinds of cancer may have certain different triggers, right? But one of the main triggers of, we know, of cancer, and one of the things that you'll find our rates are rising is certainly inflammation. And we live, I think, in once you're obese and you have any of those diseases we talked about, the top four, you know, diabetes, hypertension, you have high cholesterol, and so forth. You also, your cells are in a state of inflammatory changes, and inflammation is just how the body responds to injury or infection or any type of insult. That people who have diabetes, there's a connection between diabetes and your risk of getting a 15% increase of getting breast cancer. You have hypertension similarly, you know? So there's a lot of, I think, still the things that we eat, some of the things we eat, which have, before we move from a plant-based diet to a very processed diet, anything that has to live in plastic or stays in plastic or in a tin, you have to put preservatives in it. And someone said, if you read the tin or the plastic bag and you see more than four things that you can't understand or pronounce, then you shouldn't eat it, you know, because it's not normal or natural. You know, you have a banana on the countertop. If you don't eat it in 2 days, it's going to turn black and break down because it's going to be oxidized, right? If you put it in your body will oxidize it. So things that break down organically or naturally, those are the things you should really and truly be eating. When you take a lot of the other things and our diet has shifted where we take some stuff, you know, and I don't want to get into trouble with any food chain, but, you know, people know sometimes say that you take some of the things you get from some of the fast food outlets and you put them outside, ants won't eat them. And if you leave them out there, you'll find that, you know, over 2 weeks, they stay the same way as you got them when you first put them out. Now, you know, I certainly tell you that, you know, I use fast food. I don't have it often. Some people tell you you shouldn't have it at all, but you may have it once in a while. But I think the preponderance of that and how our diet has shifted, how our way of life has shifted, how the stresses have shifted of all health to promote our increasing incidence of cancer. We have moved from where we were before to where we are now because we have moved to more of a Western-based diet. And our alliance with the West has brought us great prosperity. It has brought us a lot of technology, has brought us ability for education and other advantages, but it has also brought us their diet, which we call it the SAD diet, which is the standard American diet, which is not we eat a bad diet. I call it the Bahamian all-food diet, where we eat any and everything we want to eat, and that in itself is not good. So again, I think in a lot of cases, not every case, because there are some people who do everything that they should do, eat right, exercise right, live right, and yet they still get cancer. So sometimes there's just that genetic trigger that you have that you may not know to pull or not. But in many cases, I think it is helped. Or even if you do get it, if you have a healthier lifestyle and you're not overweight and no predisposing conditions, you do a lot better than those who do it, you know? So I hope that answers the question.
It did.
You know, I know it's a roundabout way. But
I appreciate it. School's about to open. And, you know, we parents are busy. So I tend to give packaged food to the child, or they can eat the fast food or the chicken, the food in the back of the vendor's car, right? Give me some advice on what we should be feeding our children, especially going back to school and type of snacks.
Oh, boy. You know, the thing about it, they say we all busy parents, huh? We got to work to take care of these same children. You know, some places like in England, the people told the government, they say we can't do it. We can't come out to work because childcare is too expensive. So we don't know what we're going to do. We got to stay home and take care of these kids. But in the meanwhile, most people come from either a single parent family where the person has to work to support the family, or even if you have a two parent family, you know, like was myself and my husband, both of us had to work to support my late husband, both of us had to work to support the family. So I certainly have a lot of care and time and, you know, and compassion for working parents, because you're trying to, you know, where do you strike the balance? You know, if you notice at 5 o'clock at all the fast food outlets is between 3 to 5. Because sometimes women, especially working women, they get so tired. They just say, okay, we're just going to do Wendy's or Kentucky today or pizza or whatever, you know? So what I would say is this. You have to try to find balance, you know? Unless you're Oprah Winfrey or someone who has, you know, all the time in the world, you're not going to be able to stand up and squeeze the orange juice and cut up the salad and bake the bread and, you know, cook the chicken and kill the chicken organically. You're not going to be able to do that, you know. But what I say is that you try to include with, you know, the prepackaged stuff, you know, not to, don't give them, you know, candy every single day. Maybe try to find an alternative that they like. So maybe instead of candy, because candy is not as high in sugar. And that's another thing we didn't mention, but sugar in itself, sugar makes the body, promotes an acidic environment in the body. One can of soda has 17 teaspoonfuls of sugar in it, right? When we have an acidic environment, cancer cells like and grow better in an acidic as compared to what we call an alkaline environment. Yeah? Okay? So, you know, sugar is not, I agree with that, but you don't have to give them candy in their bags every single day. There are lots of other things you can. Think about it. You know, we used to eat off the tree, didn't we? You know, we used to go, you don't see, sometimes you'll see the juju tree or the mango tree and the fruit is rotten and falling off it, isn't that? Mm-hmm. Right? We see that because the children are not out there doing it. So try to incorporate fresh fruit. So maybe instead of candy, maybe frozen grapes. You know, you freeze the grapes, you put them in there. Maybe make some smoothies. Maybe make the ice blocks. But with the ice blocks, instead of using the sugar, make it, you know, do it with mango puree. Strain the mango. Make, you know, use the juice, put some lemon in it. Make it something that you can incorporate it into what they do. Instead of using white bread, you know, brown or whole grain bread. Now, that's another point, because bread has begotten. Bread is almost coming like a luxury item, you know. To get a loaf of bread out of the food store sometimes is $4 to $6. And, you know, depending upon the number of kids you have, it's a lot. So maybe we need to look at turning the pot cover over and maybe learning to bake some bread. And if you bake bread and somebody cook chicken, maybe you're kind of swap in between, you know. But in the sandwiches, you want to put in some sort of green, you know, some lettuce, maybe some tomato, right in the lunchbox so that the kids can eat. Maybe instead of the ice puffs, maybe try some yogurt, because yogurt has some probiotics, which is good bacteria, which will certainly help. So, you know, to try to find ways that you can, and not every day, you know, if you were eating, and things go by degrees, I'm very pragmatic, you know, if you were eating fast food 5 days a week after, you're not going to stop. But, you know, try it down and say, okay, for 2 days, we're going to eat normal. And then we'll take it up.
Doc, 3 days. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll continue with that. Call, I saw you. You can call back and I'll have you pose your question to Suzanne Lockhart. And we're talking about 50 years of health. Moving forward, what we as Bahamians should be concentrating on in terms of our health. But this is Guiding Radio AM with C.A. Nuri, and we have Dr. Lockhart with me. We'll be right back.
You see how Cora eye look funny, all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday, you see her arm was all black and blue, right?
So what you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now, you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn, and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence. And we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I land up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call a text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8. When we in the island, call toll free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get on mix up before it leave your phone, so nobody can know what you saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
Vaccines protect those we love the most, our children and our grandchildren. I vaccinated my children to protect them. Getting your child immunized can protect them against diseases like polio, measles, whooping cough, and others. So protect your child today by getting them immunized. My grandchildren are vaccinated. You should do the same. Vaccinate your children and your grandchildren and make sure they are safe.
Vaccines are essential for new and returning students. As you begin back-to-school preparations, ensure that your children's vaccinations are up to date. All vaccines are available at all public health clinics.
Brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, and USAID.
Grab your camera, capture the spirit of the Bahamas, and win cash and prizes. Scotiabank, in partnership with the Guardian Media Group, invites all youth, amateur, and professional photographers to enter the Celebrate Bahamas 50 Photography Competition. being held under the theme One Nation, One Legacy, Our Future. With more than $8,000 in cash to be won, snap those photos and send them in by August 30th. Visit guardiantalkradio.com or bs.scotiabank.com to find out how to enter. Let's celebrate our proud nation in photos. Terms and conditions apply.
The Grand Bahama News is available every Tuesday in the Nassau Guardian. Buy your local paper at Freeport convenience stores, Western Bakery, DeGregory's Fine Foods, and Bellevue Gifts. Want to reach your Grand Bahama customers? Then call Barefoot Marketing at 827-4578 or message them for ad rates via their Facebook page. Advertising opportunities now include classified ads too. Keep up with all the latest Grand Bahama news in the Nassau Guardian newspaper every Tuesday.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. This is C.A. Nuri, and of course we're talking to Dr. Susan Lockhart, and we were talking health and wellness, and before the break, we were talking about school, back to school. I'm not sure if you know, and I see the phone blinking, so I'm going to let that person come through shortly. All school free breakfast. Praise God. Mm-hmm. It's a great initiative. What type of food do you recommend? Corned beef, some tin mackerel, some tin tuna.
Man, first of all, I commend the government for doing that, because I don't know if that was like that when you were a child, but in my time in Trinidad, they had it. They had school breakfast and school lunch, and they gave it to everyone so that, you know, even if there were kids who could not afford, they didn't feel as if, you know, they were being singled out, because sometimes kids would be hungry, but they'd be proud or afraid that the other kids would laugh at them, you know, so they wouldn't do it. We got milk and cookies for breakfast and break time, and then you got like chicken and rice for lunch, you know? So it's great, because if kids go to school hungry, they're not able to concentrate and learn. And then also, you know, a child may try to steal or get lunch money in some other way that's not good. So hopefully they'll go back to what we call the good Bahamian standards of the food. And yeah, if you have some tuna and grits, that's great. You know, the tuna is going to provide you with protein and healthy oils, the grits with good sources of some carbohydrates for the kids. You know, that's a great basic protein and carb situation. And if you give them a drink that has some, you know, so maybe some sort of milk or juice with it, then you get some another additional pulse of calcium or vitamin C as well, you know, and even water is good. So that's a great thing, I think, that you can have for breakfast. That good, and we did that, didn't that? Isn't that what the mamas used to eat before for breakfast? You'd eat either some form of grits. Grits is a great sort of complex carbohydrate, and you need some sort of protein, maybe tuna. You might put some avocado in it as well, which was good. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely got to eat pair with everything. But, Doc, I have a caller here. Let me patch the caller through, let me make sure you can hear that. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Morning. How you all doing?
I'm doing well.
Wonderful, wonderful. I just want to make a few things. You know, people who are suffering with all those different diseases, like you said, because of ourselves and everything. Someone said that, because my family members and all of that. Yes, the gun could be loaded, but you don't have to pull the trigger. And what I'm saying is this. Somebody said, moderation. Well, let's look at moderation. Put a bucket outside under your top, and you turn it on slow. By tomorrow morning, it will be overflow. So that moderation still accumulates in the body when you continue. You're doing it in moderation, but the body still is being accumulated with the bad stuff. And if you get on a good plant-based diet, you'll see changes in your life. And four foods, if you can get off: white sugar, white flour, red meat, all dairy. People suffering with sinus, if they get off dairy, I tell the sinus will go, because the milk gives you mucus in the body. You know, things like chia seeds, the flax seeds, you know, stuff like that. If you take in your body on a daily basis, and then with the soft drinks, like the lady said, you know, some people take the 32 of them. You said 17 teaspoons. But when some people sit down and they drink a whole 32-ounce bottle of soda. And you look at the biscuit, you know, the McVitie coconut or the vanilla, it have on it 3 servings. But folks eat the whole pack. They tell you what a serving is. 8 ounces is a serving. But some people drink up to 16, 20 ounces of soft drinks. Gatorade or Powerade. You know what it has in it? And you pull it up. Propane glycol. You know what is in propane? Propane glycol, which is an antifreeze because it got that slippery thing. And most processed food, baked food, it has propane glycol, high fructose corn syrup. All those things, accumulation over a period of time, would make you sick. You know, if and on about it. So your diet is the key. Plant-based, go back to the biblical times. Some people can be miserable in heaven. You know why? Because there ain't going to be no meat in heaven. It's only going to be back to how the Garden of Eden was. Plant-based. Thank you.
Mm. Okay.
Well, you know, I need to have a piece of my chicken. Even if it's plant-based, I got to have some kind of pork chop.
But you know, listen, you know, what I'm talking to the gentleman, I don't know, he was very spot on with it, you know. When he talks about moderation and what you can put in the body and put out the body. And he was spot on with many things that he said. But my thing is when I'm talking to people and trying to, you're preaching to the middle, you know, because there's the food out there, eat and drink, whatever they don't mind. They say, God, there's something I'll carry. I don't mind if it's this piece of fried chicken. Mm-hmm. And then there's the group who are like my children. I mean, they say, Mommy, you'll just eat water and you'll drink water and eat sand because everything else has some calories or something bad for you. No, we're talking about you have to talk to the middle. Most people know that we have gotten ourselves into a situation with our food that we probably do need to reverse or turn back. But if you go back, he talked about going back to the garden. I'd say just go back even 50 years. The way we used to eat, the things we used to do, we never had this preponderance of, let's say, fast food present. And fast food does give you convenience. It does. But I mean, most of us then take the time we save and sit down and watch TV or be a couch potato isn't helping much. You might have done more moving around in the kitchen area. But we have to go back, going back to the way we used to eat. As I said, if you look at it, right, we have now, we may have expanded our life. I heard someone say once, I was trying to think, I can't remember the person, and I would get it and put it in the comments. But we have an increased lifespan, but we do not have an increased health span. Meaning to say, we have longer years, but they are less healthy. You understand what I'm saying? So maybe mama lived until she was 60 or until papa lived until he was 70. Maybe we are living to 80 and maybe longer, but we have more years of morbidity, meaning to say we're not well, we're going to the doctor, we're taking 3 and 4 medications. Mm-hmm. So I definitely commend the guy to say to him that he had that plant-based diet. Very simple thing, instead of meat, you know, and you said that the chicken, I'd make a term for you, they were growing artificial meat from cells in the U.S., but they were saying that it's very expensive and it wasn't tasting good. So, you know, I think go back to that plant-based diet. Lentils and beans are relatively cheap and you can, you know, mash them up and make different kind alternatives with them. That definitely could help as well. You know, that's what I think.
Okay. I have another telephone call. I don't want to interact with you, Doc. Go ahead. Speaking to Dr.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Nui.
Good morning. How you doing?
And good morning to your guests. Yeah, there's some great information, but I just wanted to make some quick points, and then she did comment because I didn't hear her mention this. And so, firstly, the gentleman who called, and he talked about propylene glycol, right? Which in these are the antifreeze, but it's not propylene, it's ethylene glycol. If it was ethylene glycol, the people they had more adverse events because it causes a crystallization in the blood, all right? So it's a sister. It's just the ratio of the carbon and the hydrogen. But what I wanted to touch on, she mentioned the probiotics, right? And so I've been reading for like over 30 years on health and nutrition. And so what I found out was that not all of the probiotics survive the stomach acid. So I would like for you to come on and comment on that as soon as I hang up. And also, I like the information on the HDL and the LDL, right? But what I'm noticing is that they have a function in the body, an excess. It's the LDL that primarily carries the cholesterol through the blood, right, to the main role in the liver and other cells. But the HDL is associated with the risk of heart failure, right? But the thing is, if you would mention the fact that the refined sugars causes the body to produce cholesterol and more triglycerides as it goes direct to the liver, right? So it wouldn't be prudent to just say, I mean, I know you told them to avoid the refined sugars, but the refined sugars really is the problem, because if these are cholesterol, the LDL also plays a role in inflammation, right? Inflammatory response, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. So just comment on the probiotics, because you know, I most people like to give out this disinformation, but obviously I just know that all of them can't survive the stomach acid. Bless up.
Mm-hmm. So again, so thank you for that. You know, I was just checking because the gentleman talked about propylene glycol, you know, and what it, and I did look at it when I looked it up, that you do have propylene glycol in food, you know. Sometimes people say they confuse it with ethylene glycol, and both use an antifreeze, but they're not the same. You know, now what I would tell you is that propylene glycol, some things, some chemicals, and again, a chemical could be at a, what you call a concentration of a part per million. It's not the best for you. But the APA and the other FDA and the other people who monitor food and drink production, especially in the U.S., they may say, okay, at this level of part per million, it's considered safe. You know, meaning to say that, you know, if you put a drop of arsenic in a lake and you drank some, you might probably not feel the best, but you probably it won't kill you. If you put a drop of arsenic in a cup of water, you probably would have a very different result. So that's the first thing. So again, that's just the whole trail, though, with additives and other things which are not from organic or natural food. Anything that you have in a package or a bottle, it has to have something to preserve it, you know, especially if it can stand on a grocery shelf for a long time. So what I tell people is, you know, we hunt in the grocery. Men were initially hunter-gatherers, where they went out and you killed your food live or you picked it up from the ground, and then you would go and, you know, eat it or do whatever you had to do with it. So we are now hunting in the grocery aisle. That's where we are. So that's that. And if you look at our gut and how we look at it, it's different. So it's not an easy topic. But again, one of the main things is to go back towards that plant-based diet, certainly, yeah? And that plant-based form of eating. So I agree with you from that perspective. Now, when you're talking about probiotics, right? All probiotics are is really part and parcel of what we think that probiotics is something that we have to take into our systems. But probiotics really and truly are part of what we call the biome, the microbiome. And I mean, that's a big topic, especially now. Because what it's found is not so much we have what we call in ourselves certain bacteria. If you were to swab your skin on a microbiological plate and grow whatever there was, you'll find there are bacteria there. We live in communication and in relationship with many different types of bacteria. And viruses, biological agents, and they don't do anything to us. You know, yeast, for instance, is something that we use, right? That's in our skin, in our body. If we have too much yeast in our body, we get candida, and it's uncomfortable in genital areas as well. But it's not necessarily all a bad thing. There's a balance. And we have what we call good bacteria. And there are some good bacteria which is thought to be things like bifidobacteria, lactobacillus, right? Those are some of the good ones, right? There are some, quote unquote, some of the bad bacteria, right? And those bad bacteria, what it's thought is that those things can increase our levels and our injury to our gut. And when it increases the level and the injury to the gut, then you can have substances seeping through which can cause inflammation. And as we were talking with the caller, inflammation can certainly cause many other things as well. So when you're talking about taking it in, so we, because the bacteria are normally found in what we have as called fermented food. So things like yogurt, yes, it's a milk-based alternative, dairy, which some people, it's not going to agree with them definitely, but yogurt is one. We have fermented food like sauerkraut or cabbage, that's another one. There's kimchi. So many of these, and then kimchi, and then many of the cultures, especially those in fermented drink or fermented food. And one of the reasons for that is that has healthy bacteria that when we take it in, right, basically it goes to our system. And the thing about it is, and I mean, I would read a little bit more to come back and tell you fully about what acid in the stomach is meant as a protective against, you know, poisons and other things like that as well. But the bacteria that we have, which is there, those are able to live in conjunction with that type of acidic environment as well. You understand what I'm saying? So when we talk about taking the bacteria in, that we already have it from the time a baby comes out of his mother's womb. He is already going to start getting that bacteria. We call it the microbiome. It's going to populate our gut. It's going to populate our lungs. It's going to populate many other areas where you normally are going to have not necessarily good things, not necessarily bad things. And it's important because the microbiome teaches our immune system how to function. Recently, when we had that COVID pandemic, it was found that people who had COVID had a lesser of that microbiome, those good bacteria, and they also had less variety of them as well. It's also found people who have things like certain digestive conditions, if you have inflammatory bowel disease and Crohn's. Now, it may sound a bit gross, but if you have that condition and you got some feces, you did a fecal transplant or got feces in a dry pill from someone who had a normal healthy gut and you took it, that would change or shift your microbiome, and those inflammatory conditions would go away. That's well proven. Similarly, there's good work done on type 2 diabetes. If you got you shifted the microbiome by taking fecal, it sounds very gross, but they have a way of doing it that you can actually change or change a condition. So it's being taught that that really is the driver of the immune system. And in many other cases, it's now being looked at as maybe even for autoimmune diseases. That is something that actually can work. So that's the comment I would make about that.
Good. So the comment about, I have some, I know we're running out of time, but I want to ask you these brief questions in terms of food. Sugar, white sugar, is that good?
No, it's not. You see, because the body...
And what should I use as a substitute?
Boy, the two types of sugar, but you have plant-based sweeteners, which are non-nutritive. One is stevia, and the other one is something called monk fruit sweetener, right? Honey, so they are non-nutritive, meaning to say they don't give you a caloric value, but they give you the sweetness. Some people don't like the taste of them, but those are the two that I recommend it. Mm-hmm. Honey is a sweetener, and yes, honey is more healthy because you have antibacterial and anti-inflammatory properties in honey, but honey still has a sugar load with it. Same thing as agave syrup. You still have a sugar load with it. Same thing as brown sugar. You still have a sugar load with it. So what I would tell people is get the sugar either. Use fruit, bananas, apples, pineapple, all have high degrees of natural sugar. You see, nature packages sugar with antioxidants, with bioflavonoids, right? Okay, with citronoids. Nature practices sugar with vitamins and minerals. So that's why you have these brightly colored fruits, which are typically high in sugar, but they also have many other things. Man now, not wanting the other things, took sugar and put it apart because it hits the pleasure center. You know, sugar hits a pleasure center in our brain. So that's why if you give a 5-year-old child and told him he could have a strawberry or he could have a Kit Kat with the same amount of sugar in it, which one do you think he's going to choose?
Definitely Kit Kat. But I got to invite you back again, because I want to go through my list in terms of food and alternative, like salt. What's the alternative for that? Milk, what's the alternative for that? Flour, what's the alternative for that? So what we'll do is invite you back, and we'll start off with that leading in. But this is Garden Radio AM. Of course, we're talking to Dr. Lockhart. Dr. Lockhart, where do you work again?
So Capriata Health and Wellness. We are traveling, and I'll tell people where I am. But you can call us at 806-0199. And we'll get to you with if you have a question or you have a health or wellness need. Capriata Health and Wellness, we are mobile medical service at this time.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you very much. And we'll invite her back on, and we'll start off with those questions. These type of food that we frequently eat, and what would be the alternative to eat? Because I don't know what to replace rice with, because I eat rice with everything. Rice got to be brown included. Rice. Someone needs
brown.
Brown?
Brown rice.
That's our power boil one. That's our power boil one. I'll invite you back as soon as next week or even later on this week so we can talk about this rice substitute.
All right.
We'll have a wonderful day. Dr. Lockhart, thank you very much.
Take care. Stay healthy. Bye-bye.
Yes, ma'am.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.